The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's all.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's all.
It's all.
Man, welcome to the Cut to It podcast. Ronnie Brown, former NFL running back, and also one of the Auburn's great duos on running back history, Ronnie Brown. Welcome to the Cut to It podcast.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, fellas. Thank y'all for having me.
Welcome, bro.
I appreciate this. I'm Steve.
I'm G.
You know, our co-host, Gerard Littlejohn, a.k.a. G, and then, you know, Backstage Joe. He does all the backstage stuff and booking. Man, we got the three amigos, man. I got a really good team. And then Brian Baltashevis and Taylor up on the dial. Mm-hmm. And, man, I got a great team. And then Meredith Carter, our producer as well, man. I got a lot of great people. Let me rephrase. I got smarter people behind me.
We brought the goons with us today.
Got goons?
We the goons.
Y'all some good folks, but goon is not the category. I'm gonna get my ass whooped if y'all my goons.
It's over for you.
I'm done.
But in the podcast world,
in the podcast world, I'm straight.
In the
streets, yeah. Molly Whopping's coming. So let's get into it, man. So we can get down to your. To the nuts and bolts of what you're doing right now, because I'm super excited about this, because we have a lot of conversation here on the podcast on business and corporate America versus the transition, the corporate America version and how they see things, and then obviously us being athletes and how making adjustments. So we'll get into that, but you know, let's do some little icebreakers. So one thing from your childhood that you have carried into your adulthood is what?
Man, it's I come from a small community, so it's probably just that lack of trust. Like you said, that, you know, not really trusting a lot of people. I think that, you know, I think just looking at people for who they are.
What's one of the worst jobs you've ever had?
Man, I did construction right before I went off to school. Mm. They had me on the roof, retarring roofs. Yeah, that was terrible.
Tar?
That's manual labor right there.
Yeah. That's that dark skin work right there.
It helped. It definitely helped me get stay this color, I promise you.
Yeah, we're going to leave the brown bag test. And I get iced up.
But here's the thing, though. Yeah. Man, construction work, I don't care what you are, who you think you are. It will let you know what you ain't.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it let me know I ain't cut out for that. I tell you that.
I work construction. You want the lie or the truth on how long I worked?
Whoever signed up for it. Man, lie to me.
So the lie is, man, I worked the whole summer. The truth is, I worked 2 days and I was done. They had me in Utah working construction, and they had us doing a drill, like chiseling down dirt. Mm-hmm. Well, my first day chiseling, mm-hmm. I chiseled for about 2.5-3 hours. I tell you, I was still shaking at lunch, like I was holding the chiller. I was shaking. I said, man, I am not working. This is not me.
Yeah,
I went to school not to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And this showed me, no, sir. I am not built for manual labor.
Go back to the drawing board.
I'll make food. I'll cook.
But this right here.
I'll sweep.
But this right here.
This construction, it ain't for me. I had the shakes the rest of the day, like I was holding a chiseler. I was walking around. I was dry. I was like this.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this is, no. All right, last one. One thing we don't know about you that you like to share.
I actually wanted to be a professional baseball player. Baseball was my first love.
Wow. Okay. What position?
Center field.
Ooh.
Athlete.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something I'm thinking. That little mustache you got under your lip, you need to shave it.
You know what? I've been wanting to ask you for years anyway. Like, yeah. Why you wear your hat like that? Why you want to bend the beard up? What's up with that?
Well, since we're going to talk about
it. We're asking tough questions today.
Well, honestly, so I used to wear them like, you know how you used to wear the hats and you go down?
Like baseball players.
Like baseball player. Well, hell, you can't see.
Yeah.
Like, you know how you turn left or turn right? And the truth is, one time, I went forward and I hit my head. It's like the so cap.
You've been like that ever since.
And I was like, man, this shit getting in the way. And I've been wearing hats since I was like 10 years old. So I just.
Yeah, but the point of the bill was.
It's my damn head. It ain't. It is just like your nasty lips, yeah, it's my head.
I just was asking, man. Hey, your prerogative. Your prerogative.
Hey, Lids ain't got no problem with my hat collection because I stay getting a new fitted all the time. I don't know. I just like them like that. I don't know.
I mean, they.
Other than.
I just wanted to see. I didn't know if it was a reason behind it.
Yeah, because that's how I wanted it. Is it okay? Like, does it bother you a little bit?
Hey, man, you like it. I love it. Your hat.
That means yes.
All right, sir, Ryan. Ronnie funny already.
I like Ronnie too. You know what's funny, and we probably would agree? This conversation and banter normally does not happen on the football field, especially with us being older.
Yeah.
Now, the new generation, they cool like this.
Yeah.
But the old generation, boy, we did not banter. Mm-hmm. We did not talk. It was professional dislike. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we ain't got nothing to talk about.
Yeah,
we ain't got nothing to talk about during the game. Like, it's just different. Like, these cats different. Like, they,
Swapping
even
jerseys.
When I went to the McDonald's All-American game a few years ago. And usually growing up how I grew up, I didn't play basketball, but if you a guy on this side of town, you hear the guy on the other side of town supposed to be the best,
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Like now, like, bro, they cool. They be dapping up, doing. Mm-mm. They help each other. I'm like, bro, this game done changed. Like, it's just different.
A lot of friendships.
Yep. You weren't friends with the cat who's on the rival team of the school that's down the street. Nah, we not friends. Like, we might play AAU together and we may cross shoulders. But, like, you still ain't, like, cool like that. Like, nah, we wanted to be Brandon Setson and Warrior Pete. You ain't trying to be like them. We ain't kicking it.
It's a little different.
It is different.
Yeah, it's a lot different. I remember having cousins on the other team, like our rival team. They were going to get it just like everybody else was going to get it.
They were going to get it first. They was going to get it first.
Like, just because.
Hey, you relative, so you know how it's going to get. Look, I already know. I know cousin Ronnie, so let me get him out the way now. Right?
Yeah.
You 100% right. You 100% right.
So, yeah. So, that's what I've been wearing my hats ever since. I like it this way, and I don't know. As one social media person said, I was reading a comment. He said, "Man, a hat company see Steve Smith coming and they get upset."
Man, this was off the
chain. You know, you
already
grew up in the country. You kind of rough.
Oh, I tell you, man, I didn't go to the dentist. I was in the league. 13 cavities later, I'm good.
Yeah, I noticed that too, bro. I love you, but I noticed that.
Oh,
Damn!
We ain't even got out of the first segment yet. He got the most jokes ever.
I like it. You that's, that's my dog. Watching these two dudes play, it was pretty. Hold on. One thing I do have a bone to pick. Yeah. Well, Cadillac is.
Okay, that's right.
Ronnie Brown.
You gotcha.
Damn, Ronnie Brown, they doing that damn. What was that? What was that offense y'all was running?
Wildcat.
Wildcat. Man, we tried to do that. do that here, in Carolina. Yeah, when I was at my prime.
It was.
You better get that out of here with a real receiver out there. Y'all had no receivers.
I know you had to be frustrated.
Frustrated.
I know you had to.
I had our offense coordinator was Dan Henney.
Man, yeah. Bro, listen. That was a default offense for us. You got to understand. I played in Miami for 6 years, and I think I had 10, 11 different quarterbacks.
That's tragic.
Yeah, it was rough, that era.
They still ain't recovered. They still looking for a quarterback.
But they still living in Marino days.
Marino ain't coming back.
Nah.
All right, so, you know, tell us where you're from and a place you call your hometown.
So I grew up in a little town called Cartersville, like north of Atlanta, about 45 minutes. But I actually live in like Atlanta now.
Mm-hmm.
It's down South Georgia boy.
So, yeah, authentically.
Boy, where you been?
Ain't even the word, but like that's my word.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Where you from? The whole nine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read you said you didn't have a lot. Explain us growing up without a lot, because there's some folk. Without a lot, it varies, and it looks differently.
Yeah. For me, I mean, it was, I grew up in a, like I said, a small town, but both of my parents, you know, had drug issues who, you know, unfortunately have passed over the last year. Mm-hmm. My mom from COVID and my dad from cancer. Wow. But just, you know, in a situation like that, I mean, it was small town. You know, you hear the saying, it takes a village. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I had cousins. I grew up in a trailer, you know, we had a kerosene heater where you had to go out and pump the little kerosene in it. And so growing up, you know, in an environment like that, our road that I lived on was called Brown Road. So most of the people on my road, you know, at that time were relatives. Yeah.
Mm. That's a story people don't hear, right? Because they look at you and they see what you've done, who you are, and they automatically assume, what's the word that you know? Oh, he's entitled. He doesn't know what hard work looks like. Uh-huh. But there's people that, like you're saying, you kerosene heater and a trailer. Man, there's some folks. I was poor. Man, I ain't had no kerosene.
And you remember that. And you remember that. And you take it with you.
Yeah.
You never leave that behind.
No, they don't. You grew up playing baseball, like you said. But what other sports did you love as a kid?
I mean, it was baseball and football for me. I had an older brother who, you know, he wrestled. He did baseball. He did football. But, you know, for me, I was the youngest in the family, too. And so I had older cousins. And so the big thing was, you know, they were going, you know, they beat up on me. You know, my brother, he's 7 years older. And so just that whole situation, you know, it made me tough. But it made me want to be like them. And so, you know, it was just I stuck to them, too. And that was, you know, really my escape. You know, a lot of us say, you know, I think just realistically speaking, for a lot of, you know, athletes, for the majority of us, you know, we're from environments where it's not a lot. There's not a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I like those type of guys because they have an edge to them. But more importantly, like, it's just, you know, I didn't think about going to college until my sophomore year when I started to get letters. And I'm like, oh, this might be real because neither one of my parents went to school. And so for me, my motivation, I wasn't running to the NFL. I was running from my current environment. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like growing up, you know, both of my parents, you know, they get into fist fights. Like, you know, my dad, unfortunately, you know, was a big drinker. My mom as well, you know, the drugs and all of that stuff. So I'm like, the only way out is through this route, you know what I mean? And so, you know, when you look at that, my whole motivation was when I went to go to school, I don't want to come back to this environment unless it's a choice that I made. It ain't that once I go to school, I got to go back. And so just kind of keeping that as motivation, that was something that, you know, I always stuck to the back of my head because I mean, the other part of people got to realize too, I was never a starting running back. Like at Auburn University, my rookie year, we had Rudy Johnson. He went to the league. And then the next year, Cadillac comes in. He's the starter. So I'm a backup. And then to get drafted where I did, that was a bonus. Mm-hmm. And then getting in Miami, you know, I spent my whole career splitting time with Ricky. Yeah. So it was just a lot different for me. And so it had to be that grind mentality.
We'll double back to, you know, you having all these stints as a running back, but who was Ronnie Brown as a kid? You've referenced your parents, you've referenced Brown Road. Who was Ronnie himself as a kid?
I mean, for me, I mean, I'm just a humble guy, small town guy, you know, with aspirations of being more, you know, even to this day, like after, you know, going to the NFL, I didn't look at that as a career. I just looked at it as an opportunity. One, the motivation was to put my parents in a better situation, but also just paying it forward, like with my kids and my kids' kids, just changing the trajectory of that family structure. You know, whereas I didn't have the aspirations like of knowing, you know, what it's like to expect to go to a college or university.
Yeah.
But now my kids, you know, my wife and I both graduated from Auburn. So for my kids, we go to gymnastics meets, we go to basketball games, football games. The expectation for my kids is when I get to college. And so, you know, my son's 8, my daughter's 6. And so for them to even say that, that's a win for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Big time.
Man, talking about college, I didn't realize you had committed to the University of Tennessee as a linebacker.
Yeah.
Why? How? Like, you play running back, right? But you committed to being a linebacker. Why?
Yeah. So in high school, when you're on, you know, you're from a small town, you know,
I wasn't from a small town, but I play, it's a lot of dudes that play double, you know,
play both ways,
both sides. Yeah.
Yeah. So I played both ways. And so I played strong safety and I played some linebacker and I played running back. And so, you know, my first probably couple offers, with the exception of, you know, Georgia Tech, most of those guys, Clemson, you know, Tennessee, they wanted me to play linebacker. And so, you know, I just wanted to tote the rock, you know, the guys that carry the mail get to score the touchdowns. And so, you know, that was where my passion was at. So when I committed to Tennessee, you know, they had Jamal Lewis. They had,
Travis Henry. Yep.
And so I'm like, man, I like the way these guys run the football. And so I'm like, man, I want to go here. And, you know, they style, they downhill approach. And then when they start, them coaches start talking about possible moving a linebacker and all of this stuff, I'm like, man, wait a minute. Let me see what else out there. So I took one official visit and went to Auburn. And how I got committed to Auburn was when I first got there, I was recruited to play baseball there as well. And so the first stop was the baseball facility. And then ended up liking it. It was like a small town. Ain't nothing in Auburn but Auburn. And so I was like, man, this feels like home. And so I ended up committing to to Auburn. Or decommitted from Tennessee, going to Auburn like a week or so before signing day.
Wow.
And so were you going to play baseball as well, or you were just set on playing football?
Yeah, I thought about it. You know, in that recruiting, you know how a lot of them conversations go. You hear a lot of stuff.
A lot of sweet talking.
A lot of stuff that might not necessarily be true when you get there. And so, you know, when I got there, it was like, oh, yeah, you can play baseball, but since you have a football scholarship, all the obligations for football come first. So you come to winter workouts, you come to all of this stuff, then you go to baseball practice. And I'm like, man, the first year after seeing it, you know, I end up redshirting, trying to do that, wasn't playing, and trying to do school. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be one of them cats to be back at the career real fast. So I ain't never give it a shot. That's one of my biggest regrets, though, that I didn't give it a shot.
This is a non-football question, but how much did college prepare you for life?
Not much at all.
Wow.
You know, I think the big part about it, the biggest thing that came from sports to me was, you know, I met a lot of people that I wouldn't have otherwise met. You know, like being on this podcast, like crossing paths with someone of, you know, your stature, meeting guys like you guys. You know, I think that was the biggest thing that football did for me. But outside of that, in terms of, you know, me coming and going in corporate America, I had zero preparation, especially like even getting drafted, you know. I wasn't financially ready. I didn't understand that. And so, you know, while draft day was probably one of the most exciting days of my life, it was also one of the scariest coming from where I come from. I didn't know what to do with it. And then you got to think, somebody give me money and take me and put me in a city like Miami. You know, that was kind of like, how do I navigate this? And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I just don't want to be one of them guys that go broke and not really know what the situation or mess this situation up. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to my dad talk a lot. He loves to talk. Just give him a minute and he'll be right back.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're a financial advisor now, and you get to look back at Ronnie when he got drafted. You know your story, right? And this isn't a time for us to dredge up and try to poke holes through your story, but just to hear you going backwards into saying, like, were you really set up for success? And if you were not, why is that? Because before you answer, there are a ton of people, right? Just, you know, we can all drive past a situation and assume why that individual is there. For instance, mental health, right? Some people, mental health, or even if you take an aspirin, you take an aspirin for the symptoms. But sometimes we don't go to the root cause. And you being a financial advisor now, and also being the kid with the headache, when you were in the league, you were taking aspirins. But now you're a financial planner, you get to go to the root cause. What do you believe some of your root causes were for you in some of the financial prosperity and mistakes that you made as a young man?
You know, the environment, not even knowing what wealth accumulation was. You know, I think the majority of us athletes, our exposure to wealth is usually tied to debt initially. And so growing up environment.
Why do you think it's tied to debt?
Let's just say 1 year, like for Christmas, we couldn't afford, you know, Christmas presents. And so, you know, luckily I have a set of godparents, you know, white family that came in, and I met my godbrother at 6 years old playing, you know, a recreation football. But 1 year, my mom took you know, my name and, you know, I'm junior. We applied for a credit card. That was how we got Christmas presents for that year. Yep. And so not until after I graduated and I got drafted, I paid that off. And so my initial experience with having money was debt, because I didn't know how to have money, because I come from an environment where, you know, I was taught to survive. I never understood the benefits of thriving. I never heard of, you know, 529 account. I never heard of some of these things to set you up, you know, even life insurance. So there were certain things that I didn't even know about that I had to educate myself on. And so when you come from that type of environment, you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know. And so, you know, when you ask me about how does school prepare you for that, it doesn't, because realistically speaking, a lot of the coaches that are tied to universities, their job is to win. They're not tied to, you know, you going to class or seeing what your major is. They don't ask you that. Like, the one thing that most coaches, and I ain't going to say all, is like, are you eligible? It ain't what's your GPA or what are you majoring in or what are you planning on doing. It's, are you eligible? And then I don't even think it's coincidental that when you first get to school, you bogged down with a bunch of elective classes. This has nothing to do with, you know, what you're trying to get into, what's happening post-college. You do a bunch of electives, and I think the initial thought is, let's get in, help them get transitioned to keep them eligible for sports. And then the ones that show that they got a lot of ability, those are the ones we're going to keep around. But the ones that don't, that's how we weed out the process. And so it ain't even a good process when you start from it. And, you know, you hear a lot of the arguments, oh, yeah, you got a free education. Well, you got to think about it. The majority of these guys didn't even go to college to go to school. They going because of the opportunity to use this for a way to get to where they're trying to get to.
I mean, I think you brought up an interesting point. It's, on one hand, I can look at my college experience and say I met connections that have put me into the trajectory of my career and entrepreneur journey to where, you know, they open up a spot at the table for me. But on the other hand, I agree 100% with you, Ronnie, into where I wasn't prepared for adulthood through college. You don't learn about balancing a checkbook. You don't learn about debt to income ratio. You don't necessarily, unless you're like an economics major, but you don't necessarily learn all those tangible things. So it goes both ways. But I think ultimately the root of it goes to, and I think it even just extends outside of athletes, is just financial literacy. If that isn't passed down or if it isn't taught, it can evade someone very, very quickly.
Yeah. And that's most guys' story. Think about it. Like, you come from an environment and then you go into this to play sports. You know, you don't have a coach, or even just, let me take a step back. Growing up, like, we don't applaud educational knowledge. Like, my son is 8 years old. And so when he goes out, everybody knows, oh, like Reese Brown, he's the fastest guy in third grade. Like, the way that they applaud that, they don't do the same thing for education and information. Because at the same time, you know, I'm looking at him, I talk about the importance of going to school, and he's like, well, I don't want to be labeled as a nerd. And so, you know, there's a negative connotation with being a smart kid, you know? And so I think that was the case even growing up. It was like, you didn't want to be the smart kid. So that's why a lot of guys acted out. Or, you know, it was kind of like the envy part of it. Because I'm not smart, I get a chance to be a bully. And so make it not cool to be the smart guy. And so, you know, I think that's another issue in itself. Like, we don't applaud education.
Or it's just that people don't, like, you can't pass down something that you don't have. So I think that's the other part too, that information isn't obtained, so it can't be passed down.
The other layer is they're also being a distraction because some of what they're learning or being taught, it isn't registering, right? They're not grasping, because we've taken out home economics. We've taken out, you know, I remember growing up when we did it every year. Man, we used to make this little stupid, silly teddy bear, right? Used to sew it, cut it out, yarn, put the cotton in there, and, you know, make a face.
I mean, I had Build-A-Bear.
But we used to
put the button on.
Yes.
Learn how to sew the button.
Yeah, you used to do that and cook, all of that stuff. They don't have it anymore. Uh-huh. It's, you remember, driver's ed used to be offered in school. I remember they took driver's ed out of my high school like 2 years before I got to high school. pretty much why I didn't get a driver's license. So I was about 22.
Because I also didn't have no folk that had insurance. You couldn't take the driver's test without insurance, proof of insurance. So that ain't my family wasn't signing up to get they get the car taken.
Yeah.
So it's so what money wise as an advisor and going into corporate America, what's been the hardest transition for you? Would you say it's hard to being a former athlete to transition to corporate America because of how people view you?
1,000%. You know, and I think there's two hurdles, right? And so making that transition, one of the hurdles was because, you know, I think certain people regarded me as someone who, you know, had been a professional, being drafted, you know, second pick. And so wondering why would you transition into something else following, you know, a career where, you know, people look at it as, oh, I know how much money you made. And so in our own culture, especially as Black people, is, oh, you must be broke since you working. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side.
Wait till you downsize, right? And your neighbor's looking at you like, oh, he must have tricked off his money. Not that I'm talking right about personal experience, so, but just telling you what they say when you downsize.
Right. And so that part of it, but then also on the other end of the spectrum, the reason I emphasize education to my kids is transitioning into corporate America, I realize people don't respect athlete intellect. You know what I mean? Because And I've had a bunch of those conversations where, you know, when I first got into this and I'm taking the license exams and all of these things, you know, the first question is, you know, did you take the Series 7? Have you taken the 66? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, and you passed? And I'm like, wow. Yeah, like just, you know, and so those underhanded comments. And
why
so
saying,
I think there's,
hold on, bro. Why are you saying wow?
Because that's so disrespectful.
Well, that's how they look at us.
The thing that I think about is people respect you for what you do, but not for what you think. We love your talent, but we don't love your mind.
I always talk about is how athletes, how we assess, how we must adjust at halftime and in practice, right? That how the corporate classroom lacks the adjustment. They lack the ability to make. Like it takes 6 or 7 months or sometimes 6 or 7 years to even see the residual of making one or two decisions, where those one or two decisions are the difference between winning and losing a game. And you'll talk about it the following Monday after less than 24 hours of experiencing it. Mm-hmm. So how did playing sports in corporate America, like how do they butt heads from you being a high octane performing individual?
Yeah, well, I think one thing is as athletes who especially aspire to do things intellectually, you have an advantage because like you said, like as athletes, you learn how to deal with adversity. You learn how to be a team player and how to sacrifice. That ain't something necessarily true when you come into corporate America because that your existence is based on individual. It's like, you know, everything that you learn up through, you know, I think that point of marriage is what do I need to do to be better? Like, how can I do this? Like, what do I need to do? And so it's all pertaining to I, whereas you learn a sense of sacrifice being an athlete. You learn how to deal with adversities. You learn how to deal with challenges. You know, I wouldn't call it failures. I call it learning lessons. Absolutely. Or teachable moments. And so you learn those things. So coming into corporate America, I felt like I had an advantage. My biggest hurdle was people not wanting to allow me to grow outside of that box that they wanted to keep me in as, you know, the second overall pick, the Miami Dolphins former running back, and wanting to keep me in that space. But intellectually, you know, I feel like there's, you know, a lot of stuff to learn. But, you know, what we've done, it's not many people that can accomplish that. But being able to go and educate yourself, that's the easy part of it. All you have to do is apply yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's what really helped me, even with going through those tests. Like, those exams weren't easy. Like,
no.
It's the first time in my life I ever took a 6-hour exam. But to sit there and be dedicated, I know what that's like. It took me 22 years to get to the NFL, or, you know, we'd say probably 16 because you started at 6 years old when I started playing. And so to have that and understand what it means to be dedicated, determined to an end goal, not a lot of people can say that, you know, and so I feel like that was my advantage and understanding that and being willing to do, you know, because the guys like yourself, Steve, like a guy that I, you know, is a Hall of Fame wide receiver, there is a level of commitment that normal people, a lot of people don't understand mm-hmm. that you have to be willing to do and certain sacrifices that you have to make to get to that level of success. And so to know that you're able to do that when, you know, most people would have quit at certain moments, like breaking your forearm or certain things, not everybody's willing to do that. And so I'm like, man, I'm willing to do something that you're not. I'm willing to go, you know, where you aren't to get to where I'm trying to go. And what part of that probably comes from, you know, an upbringing, but the other part of it is, you know, hey, just as a competitor, that's what I enjoy, like, is being better.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you've seen transitioning from football into corporate America that people have, things you have seen with your eyes because of being a football player, not allowing, we call it Jedi mind trick. You know, when you're running back, you're sitting in there and you're right next to the quarterback. So the quarterback in the center has to make adjustments based on the defense. And if the free safety comes down, they slide, and he comes down, and now he's a nickel linebacker, you know. And so they start to do things, and then a quarterback says a magical word in that offense that tells all the other men, we have to make an adjustment. How is the adjustment ability in corporate America when you compare it to football and or sports in corporate America?
Dude, I think we're starting to see the effects of that. You know, we talk about, you know, all of this mental stuff that's going on. I think a huge part of that is due to these adversities and the lack of being able to make adjustments. You know, I think an effect of that is a lot of the mental challenges we're seeing. Like, I think that's, you know, not what a lot of people are used to, especially like in certain environments. Like, my kids go to private school, right? And so I think one of the challenges in those environments is you're in a bubble because everybody around you is like you. You know, everybody has some type of, or for the most part, everybody has financial means, or everyone has shared goals of, you know, where they come from. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when you talk about getting outside of that bubble and the reality of life, not everyone can deal with that adversity. That's why I think there's, you know, a huge upside to creating diverse companies or being in diverse company. Like Steve Smith, you can put on a jacket and go a suit and tie and go into a room with a bunch of billionaires, or you can go to, you know, to the middle of the hood in LA and hang out and be just as comfortable. Not everybody has that flexibility. And so being able to be comfortable in those different environments gives you an advantage. And so a lot of times in corporate America, people don't have that flexibility and don't know how to make those, you know, on-site adjustments or in the moment adjustments when it comes to, you know, those disappointments or those adversities.
When you first got onto the corporate America, did some, with your ability to make those adjustments, were they counterintuitive for your success originally?
A little bit, because I think the reality of it is, like, you lose a little bit of yourself, especially for me. Like, you know, I think to some degree, at 40 years old now, I don't think that I've always organically been myself. And that's sad to say, you know, what I'm saying? I feel like in certain environments, you know, in certain environments, for me to make that transition, I feel like I had to assimilate to a certain environment, which made me uncomfortable. Like, you know, going into it, you know, now I don't really wear suits, but when I first got into it, you know, I was dressing with slacks and, you know, I looked like a little insurance guy, but I was trying to make you know, I was trying to make everybody feel comfortable with my presence, but I was the most uncomfortable in that. And so I think it made it hard because working with some athletes, they kind of looked at it like, oh, you lame. Like, you know what I'm saying? But then on the other end is, you know, you're trying to fit into an environment which you really weren't meant to fit in anyway.
Hold on. Whoa. Why weren't you meant to fit in?
Because you don't need to dress like an insurance guy to be in corporate America. Like, just embrace it. You are who you are. Like, that's just not how I normally dress. So the confidence didn't even come off as such, because I didn't feel comfortable with, all right, man, like, instead of wearing, you know, these dress shoes, you know, I'm gonna come in there. I got, you know, maybe some jeans and some Stan Smiths and, you know, maybe a button up or something. Yeah. But not trying to look like everybody else.
Gotcha.
When you know you're not like it. I'm not like everybody else. Yeah. Like, and so just getting to a point of comfortable to say that, like, man, listen, like, yeah, I'm not like you. My journey wasn't like yours. And so what I bring to the table is something totally different. And I just finally I'm just finally starting to get to a point where I've accepted who I am to be able to go out and have those conversations as a representative of self and not trying to be something I'm not.
How many years have you been yourself now?
This is probably the first year where I'm just getting comfortable with, you know, and I know where people, what the saying means, like, elevation requires separation. Like, it's just some people that just got to get left, or some people are just not going to accept you for who you are. But until you're true to yourself, it's not really going to matter anyway. And you, so you're really not successful, even though you may reach some level of success. But if you're not yourself, then you're not really successful. And so, you know, in going out and having these conversations, I'm just getting to a point to where I'm comfortable with acknowledging that and just saying, all right, man, if you don't mess with me, you just don't mess with me.
Going along with what Smitty has said about misconceptions, though, what's the biggest misconception that people have about money from your perspective as a financial advisor?
The more money you have, the more intelligent you are.
Damn, it's a lot of dumb billionaires out there, ain't it?
And that's the exact thing, that, you know, and I see it all the time, especially when you talk about, you know, people with money, and then that goes back to the athletes. A lot of times for athletes, you get drafted, you get these big signing bonuses. People expect you to be responsible. I'm like, wait a minute, like, these young men, 22 years old, like, if I gave you anybody at 22, you know, multiple million, you're going to mess it up, especially when you have no idea of what it looks like to have it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, you know, we want to associate intelligence with wealth. I'm like, man, there's a lot of dummies out here that can hit the lottery. They got a lot of money. They don't know what to do with it.
There's two things that I associate money as a great example is one, I say making it in the NFL is because I've had people say, man, you know, how could you trick off or how could you mess up? The lotto is a great example of people messing up money. And then also, too, being in the NFL is equivalent to getting your tax return. How many times, just for me and my family, boy, when we got that tax return, that thing was spent before we got it. And then the other thing, as a little kid, you want to know how a kid is going to treat something? Back in the day, before it became electronic and, you know, like Dave and Buster's with the card, give a kid $5 or $10 and take him to the arcade. Man, I just remember getting that $5 or a couple of dollars when it used to be a quarter. Man, give me a dollar and go play Miss Pac-Man, right? You got those four quarters and it costs, three quarters to play. You don't even know. You can see a kid how they are. And you can see an adult how they are. It's how they play video games in an arcade with their kids. When you get those points, you get that charge card, when you don't have to pay attention to it, you can get a charge card of Dave and Buster's for, you know, 5,000 points for $40. And in less than 10 minutes, that card is down to zero that quick. Because you don't have to think about it. You just get the swipe or, you know, COVID, you know, tag it or, you know, wand it over and all of a sudden you're done.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we'd be remiss though, Ronnie, if we didn't, you know, at least talk about, you know, your football career. And you mentioned Auburn just a little bit, but you know, everyone, of course, remembers that duo, you and Cadillac Williams, one of the best running back duos in history of SEC. Y'all had that undefeated season in 04. Just what are some of your fondest memories of playing at Auburn?
You know, for me, it was just that relationship. You know, a guys that I came in with, you know, in 99, 2000, you know, guys I got recruited with. You know, my roommate was Jason Campbell, you know, Cadillac and Carlos Rogers came in the following year. And so just growing with that group of guys and establishing those bonds, I think that's what's different than being in an NFL locker room is because, you know, you're adults, you know, everybody got responsibilities. Some guys got families. And so you're not really creating that camaraderie. Like in 2004, you know, over those few years, we did everything together. We went out, you know what I'm saying? We went to the bars, we hung out, we did everything. And we created, you know, an environment where we believed in each other. And then even before that is we got to know each other. You know what I mean? Like, I know where, you know, Steve's from. Like, I got to know about his family, like what motivated him. And so when I line up beside a guy, we go through these offseason workouts. I know exactly what I'm going to get. So when we get on the field, it's easy to trust him. Like, especially with the guys that you know that you, you know, just you tight with, you know, I know exactly what I'm about to get out of them. And so creating those bonds, like that's the best part about sport for me is I'm addicted to being a competitor. Like I compete in everything. I hate to lose more than I like to win. And so being in that environment, getting to know guys, you know, that was the cool part.
Man, Jason, you started mentioning on names. Carlos Rogers, hell of a DB, right?
That team was stacked.
But Jason Campbell, I think of Jason Campbell, he was a guy that didn't get a fair opportunity.
Steady.
When you look at his college career and then you look at his football career, every year he had a new coordinator. He never got to adjust and get comfortable. And that's the same thing of in financial world. How can you really gain any traction, have any kind of residual, passive income, mailbox money, if you're constantly transactionally changing philosophies, you know, to where it just doesn't help you? And Jason Campbell is one of those guys, when I go back and as an analyst, I go back and go, man, this dude with the 49ers, with the Washington Commanders, Washington football team, he never had consistency. It was always... He was always moving. It was always a moving target. The goalposts always moved for him. Now that you are a financial planner and now you've been on in football, going backwards of what you knew being a Miami Dolphin, being an Auburn Tiger, what would you change or alter for yourself or other men or women coming out of college that can help you stay on the right path?
I think, bro, the honest part of that is understanding the power of education, you know, and I think we all hear it, knowledge is power, mm-hmm. but to really understand it at this phase, especially as athletes, because, you know, I go into these different environments and a lot of these guys look at athletes just like prey, because you're going to get a lot of money, but you don't have a lot of understanding and knowledge. So that creates opportunity to take advantage of guys. And so there's a lot of that that happens, but just in general in life, the more knowledgeable you are, you can limit a lot of the BS, a lot of the, I think, bad decisions and make more educated decisions. And so, you know, as individuals, we got to be willing to educate ourselves, involve and engage ourselves in the process. You know, too many times, you know, even myself, that's part of the reason I transitioned is there was too many times I gave people power and reign over my financial situation, you know, without getting an understanding of it. You see guys all the time, like you in a locker room, you ask a guy, like, you know, whether you don't have a lot of financial conversations, but when you do, it's like, hey, how much you pay your guy? And it's like, oh, I pay him 1%. Most guys don't even know 1% of what or how that's made up or what the construct, how that's constructed, yep. or, you know, and getting involved in it. You hold your agent more accountable than you do your financial advisor. It's like, well, what's up with this deal? What's up with, and we don't have those conversations. So we have to make it normal to educate ourselves about the stuff that we're involved in, whether it's businesses, investments, you know, life, people that we're involving and allowing to be a part of our circles. It's just the education that has to be there.
Both of y'all lightly touched on mental health, but Ronnie, what do you do in terms of taking care of your mental? You've mentioned both your parents recently passed away. I can relate to that. I just had a parent that I lost in the past year. So what do you do to take care of yourself mentally?
You know, I'm working on that. You know, and I'm acknowledging that, you know, because I appreciate that honesty. Yeah, because we all have trauma from growing up, mm-hmm. you know, certain environments, certain things that we dealt with, and that shapes us the older we get, whether it's the parenting style or different things that how we respond to certain, you know, situations. And so I actually just had a conversation with my wife the last few months about, I mean, I think I'm gonna go start seeing like a therapist or something, mm-hmm. just to kind of get some of those things out that I know are down there before, you know, at some point, if they, you know, as I get older and certain things that I experience, that they start to kind of come back and show their face. And so, you know, that's something that I want to get more involved with.
Oh yeah. It's easy to bury it and it's easy to pretend like it's not there.
Yeah. And you know, I think Jay-Z's, his whole, you know, I think his quote was, you know, you can't heal something that you're not willing to reveal. Yep. And so I know there's some stuff down there that I just need to get out and have a conversation about.
What's some of the disadvantages you have now as a advisor walking into some of these meetings with soon to be athletes or soon to get drafted? Or do you stay away from athletes? Tell, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and working with that, the biggest part of that is, bro, the hurdle of I'm not entertaining the bullshit. I'm not telling the guy, man, listen, I'm going to help you finance this car. Like, bro, you don't need none of that stuff. And it's not shiny. It's not attractive to a lot of these young guys, especially being in those situations, because I know how that ends up for a lot of guys. I've seen it. And so, and just knowing that a lot of these guys aren't for you, you know, it's a transactional relationship, you know, and we all know how some of those relationships start. But at the end of the day, as a business guy, logically speaking, there's nothing free in life. And so if you're one of them guys that somebody been giving you money to sign with them, you got to understand just in the nature of business, they going to recoup their money first before anything happens. And so, you know, just not being willing to even have those conversations with guys, it probably cuts off a lot of access to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But then also on the other side of it, it's being a threat to a lot of the guys that are already in it, because I'm not willing to tell a guy a lie and I'm going to keep it, you know, a buck with them and tell them the truth about how this works. Cause I'm not interested. I don't want to share in your fame and notoriety. I don't care about going to professional games and being on the sideline or being on your Instagram. I got my own family. And so at the end of the day, I'm here to hopefully for you to assist you in life after this over. Yeah. Cause it don't make no sense if you go through all of this and you finish and you ain't got nothing to show for it. Like, that's a sense of failure. And so, you know, my whole goal is for you, when you finish this, is to kind of create a lifestyle that's sustainable and not being interested in what everybody else doing. And so, you know, it limits the access. It makes the entry point a lot harder because there's not a lot of relationships that are being created because it's not a lot of what we said earlier, authentic relationships. So you know what I mean?
Has it been tough for you or relieving to walk into these meetings? Because let's be honest, I know you done sat. I got my combine book last week, and in the combine book, they have things that you can fill out. And it has miscellaneous information. And some of the miscellaneous information is information that these young men have divulged on their own. It is some well of a tales in that thing. It's some well of a tales.
Yeah, now it's been tough. You know what I mean? Because making the transition, one, a lot of us, you know, I'm in a locker room with you, and then I transition, and a few years later, you see me as a financial advisor. One, you already don't trust that process. And so strategically speaking, that's why I kind of went with a bigger firm and had to get, you know, credentials and all of that stuff. And then I compare that with the real life experience of going through it. You know, I'm like, it ain't too many guys that can say they went and got drafted where I did, went through those experiences, but now on the other side of the table to assist you through that. And so, you know, now I'm somewhat of a threat to a lot of guys.
Stop lying. You are a threat.
Right. So I'm affecting that chain of command because it's like, wait a minute, if we allow Ronnie to get in, one, he can speak the language of a lot of the athletes and he understands it. But then two, he has the ability to give them the good advice about stuff that they're going to experience and to keep it real life experiences and not try to hide in them. Because at the other end of the day, I'm like, man, I don't need your money. You know what I mean? Like, I just want it's exciting for me to be able to give you the game that I wish I had known. You know, and a lot of times, Steve, you know, like, because of that pride, we don't even keep it 100 when our advisors or our people have taken advantage of us or we get in situations. Like, we don't share them stories with the young guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? About people that have, you know, wronged us or whatever, because that pride, we don't want to let nobody know that we were vulnerable in this situation. And so we don't even speak on it. And unfortunately, the next guy gets taken advantage of. Yeah.
My financial guy, I used to go from practice. I would go and watch him input the stock in, like just to make sure he did it right. And also that I can learn. So my financial guy, I have a good relationship with, he was willing to teach me. So I actually interned.
Yeah.
I interned. He was with UBS. UBS and then Morgan Stanley. I interned with him for 2 years and learned. And I was kind of on my route to take my Series 7. And then my wife said, no, you and these numbers, y'all need to give it a rest, right? And I'm a numbers guy already. You're talking about, man, I can sit with a notepad and ink pen. I can get after it. What has been the most rewarding aspect of the of your new venture and job? And to some degree, you know, I'm not stepping on a limb here and saying it, but I do believe your calling and what you feel like God has put you here, not just to serve your family, not just be a great husband, to be a great son and father, but just, you know, also paying it forward.
Yeah. And that's it, man. Like, I believe in servant leadership. And I feel like I was called to go through that whole experience of growing up how I did, going through Auburn, going through the NFL, just to be in this situation to, you know, assist people. You know, unfortunately, people hold money in such a high regard. So to see them get that financial freedom, or to at least have a strategy, a plan in place to where it creates some comfort and not, you know, the pressures, you know, that's rewarding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think knowledge and information only as good as your willingness to share that. And so it wouldn't do me any good to learn all this stuff if I'm not willing to share it with, you know, a lot of the younger guys. You know, I work with a lot of non-athletes as well. And so, you know, that's the beauty in it, is being able to share that and see somebody feel comfortable with that whole process.
So for people who may not know, what is servant leadership and how does that differ from other types of leadership?
For me, because I would never tell somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. You know, just the same way that, you know, I'm telling, you know, people to do stuff. that's what I'm doing myself. You know what I mean? And so, you know, in this position, a lot of times we get it wrong is because as a leader, we feel like we stand in front of a group, we tell them what to do, and nobody's holding us accountable. But I'm like, man, listen, I'm in the bunker with you. You know what I mean? And so understanding, like, listen, when I say do this, it's from experience or it's from something that I'm doing myself. Now, will I always be right?
No.
Absolutely not.
I mean, but human, at least you know you can't always, you can't always predict the unpredictable, especially with money and human error, human feelings in the business ventures or also the economy, right?
Right. And so I'm like, you know, I never error. And you, I mean, if you hold me accountable, I mean, if you, you know, fire me for being honest with you, you know, then I'm fine with that. But you ain't got to worry about me ever lying to you, you know, or trying to get over. And so, you know, I think when I think of servant leadership, it's, you know, doing what I'm telling you to do myself. And you hold me just as accountable, you know, as I, because there's a, it's an accountability thing.
Who's the most difficult client?
It's the athlete, because we don't know. And so there's an educational hurdle that, you know, because I tell guys, look, you should never invest in anything that you don't understand. And so if I try to make it too difficult to understand, then you probably should be worried about what's happening. And so, you know, this thing should be simple. And so there's not a lot of people willing to invest the time into the education process to make sure the athletes are comfortable or to know exactly what's going on, because unfortunately in certain situations, people are trying to hide something or there's just not 100% transparency. And so to be willing to make that commitment to educate these young men, you know, it's a big key. And then, you know, it's a time commitment. Yep. And to know that, you know, my investment is seeing how well they do after this is all said and done. And so in dealing with that clientele group, it's a lot, it's a bit of a challenge because, you know, there's a trust barrier that has to be there because, you know, a lot of us don't even trust this process anyway because it's so new.
Yeah.
Like we didn't know.
And you shouldn't.
Growing up.
You shouldn't right. trust a new process.
Right.
Especially with assets that, you know, hopefully you are going to be able to rely on for the rest of your life. And if you're doing it well enough and your advisor has the right perspective, it's generational changing. It's generational wealth. It should be. It actually, and this is my philosophy, you should have your money working for you to where you comfortably can take a portion out and set it aside for the next generation. So your grandkids should be getting a portion of your assets just off rip. Because for me, when I look at wealth in other cultures, that's how it is. It's generational. Like, you know, I say it for me, for black folks, sometimes we get jealous at inheritance, right? We get jealous of, she didn't even earn her money. You're right, because her family decided, we're going to invest in this. So Trey, right? Stevon the third. Like the third, you know, it's Steve Smith Sr., Steve Smith Jr., and then it's Trey, Steve Smith the third, or the, you know, the third should be reaping the benefit of me breaking my arm in New York. I just, you can't trick it off in Vegas all the time. You gotta have something to show for.
Or there just wasn't an inheritance to pass along anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the other part of the whole conversation. So, Ronnie, you mentioned you're 40. Where are you going to be in the next 10 years?
Dang, I mean, you'd be 50 and I'd be 53.
Yeah, you'd be old.
I'd be 53.
Man, I think, you know, for me, it's one, my kids, my son, you know, off to college, my daughter doing well in high school. For me personally, I don't have an end zone with this one. Like, I don't have a goal line. Like, I'm trying to see how many guys I can help, how many people I can help, how many families I can affect. With doing this mission. And so, you know, who knows? Like, I'm gonna do it to the best of my ability and see where it take me. But I honestly can say I don't have an end zone. I don't, you know, I ain't trying to cross the goal line with this one because there is no number for it.
Well, appreciate you, bro. I know you got some you got some financial careers to save, man, and keep doing your thing. And we'll hit you up. We'll link up, man. Since you right there in Atlanta, man, we can give you an excuse to come up to Charlotte.
Hey, man, I do it.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It. Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team, Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Lebrecht, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.